give me one shot here on a blue chip stock, believe me, Kevin, the only problem I'm gonna have is that you didn't buy more.
Nobody knows if the stock is gonna go up, down, sideways, or in circles.
What is good, NBA draft fans? Your boys are back. The Wolves of Ball Street, your favorite draft analyst. It's the Draft Doc, NBA Draft Podcast. My name is Corey Teleba, and I am here, as always, with my co-host, Albert Garbage Time Gim. Albert, what's going on, dude?
What's going on, everybody? I'm doing well. I hope my audio, my video comes out okay. We had some AV issues before starting, and it's all on my end. I'm going to try to figure this out, but it's good to be back. I'm crazy excited to talk about Scoot today because, number one, he has an absolutely elite name. Scoot Henderson is a fantastic name, and he's got a fantastic game. There's going to be a lot for us to cover, and I'm excited.
Hell yeah, man. Scoot is a good name.
Yeah.
That's like a famous person's name. Like, you know, you got to live up to that. But Scoot Henderson is a really intriguing prospect for a number of reasons, mainly because, like Victor Wembanyama, who we covered last week, Scoot has also already played a professional season. He is a guard for the G League Ignite. He's 18 years old, played last season as a 17-year-old, listed at 6'2", 195, not sure what the wingspan currently is. It looks like he's got some plus length on him,
yeah,
just based on the video. He averaged 24 minutes per game, averaging 14.6 points per game, 4.7 rebounds per game, 3.9 assists per game to 2.2 turnovers, along with 1.9 steals and 0.2 blocks, shot 45.4% from the field, 19.6% from downtown, not great, and 78% from the free throw line, but he did have a true shooting percentage of 58.8%. So his stock price coming into the year, he's the unanimous number two prospect behind Victor, according to all of the outlets. ESPN has him number two, SB Nation number two, Bleacher Report number two, The Athletic number two, Tankathon number two. He is the number two guy. It's Victor, it's Scoot. Those are the guys that, you know, everybody is looking forward to getting their hands on. All of the teams that are tanking, these are, you know, the potential prizes for NBA teams preseason. You know, as we know, we've talked about plenty of times, starting the year with those rankings is one thing. You got to live up to it. But these are two guys with pro experience, and Scoot, you know, looked good in his G League stint. So at number two, Albert, is that too high, too low, or is it just right for you?
I think it's just right. I think it's just right. He's a close second, is my opinion as of now. I think by the time we get closer to the draft, he might really be pushing Victor pretty hard for that number one spot, is the sense that I'm getting. And this is just, you know, we want to preface all this by saying that everything we're going to say on this pod is based off of what we saw, you know, during his G League play. And I think there's a lot in the tape that should get you excited about what he's going to look like in year two for the G League Ignite. And if he makes another jump there for that team as an 18-year-old, I think the talk for number one is going to be a lot closer than maybe some people realize.
I could definitely see that outcome. But you know what's really interesting to me about Scoot is that he's this really highly regarded prospect, and rightfully so, right? As for all the reasons we're about to get into. But he also represents this archetype that has kind of gone out of style in the league. You know, he's this short, really athletic point guard, kind of shoot first, right? But we're not really sure if the jumper from distance is going to come along. You know, it's kind of the archetype that's in is like the big jumbo initiators, right? It reminds me of that Men in Black scene with, you know, Will Smith, where he's like, what's he say? I'm the new hotness. You're old and busted. I'm the new hotness. And like, everybody has become infatuated with like these, you know, big LaMelo Ball, Dyson Daniels, these big Josh Giddey dudes who could, you know, have the size to play up and down. But with Scoot, what I think it comes down to when you look at him being so highly projected at such a young age is like outlier talent is outlier talent, no matter what the current trends are in the league. You're going to draw people and draw interest if you have something special about you, regardless of how in or out. So that's what I think is really interesting about Scoot.
Mm. Yeah, I'm there with you. I'm actually, Corey, like in my notes here, I'm actually really, really excited to talk about the shooting with you because I actually had a lot of questions for you. Obviously wanted to pick your brain on what you thought and what you were seeing because I wasn't as down on his shooting as I thought I would be after watching the tape. But of course, once again, I do have questions because I'm genuinely curious about what you thought. But yeah, I'm with you, man. It definitely doesn't seem like he's the type of guy that we should be super interested in right now. But the talent is there. My comp for him is a guy who really didn't pan out in the league. I'm just hoping that he is the, you know, plus version of that. But yeah, man, I'm excited. There's a lot to pick.
Well, let's save your comp for the end of the show. But I mean, let's start with the shooting. We start with the shooting a lot. And with Scoot, it's definitely this swing skill, I think, between potential all-star and like potential superstar. So let's get it started. What kind of questions, you know, come to mind for him?
Sure. So my biggest question that I wanted to ask you is, well, if you watch the tape, clearly he loves mid-range pull-up. He mm-hmm. liked it a lot, like a lot.
Yeah.
My question is, when he was shooting threes, I wanted to pick your brain on his, because I thought overall the shot looked pretty good to me. Obviously, you know, not the best eye in the world, but I try my best. My question to you, Corey, is what you thought about his base, because in this is just, you know, from my, you know, I thought his feet were a little close together when he was shooting threes. So that's kind of where I wanted to start. Number one was from the base, what your thoughts were on that. And also kind of like a larger, more macro question is, can you give me and our listeners a little bit more insight from the coach's perspective on base overall? Like, what's the ideal type of base? Because we talked about AJ Griffin in the last draft cycle well, and a lot of people thought his base was too wide, too low. And can you kind of give us some background on how that actually affects the shot? Like, if you're too wide, what is the result look like? If you're too narrow, what does that look like?
All right. So yeah, so a lot there. You said very reliant on the mid-range. According to Instat, he was in the 95th percentile on mid-range shots, which is very good. So, you know, he's going to something that he's comfortable with. And I think with a guard who's going to be heavily reliant on ball screens, that's, you know, a really important shot for him to have. And I think he already has that. So that's good. I think when you look at his mid-range shot versus when you look at the three-point shot, the first thing that I notice is that he rises up and gets a lot of elevation on the mid-range shot. Whereas on the three-point shot, there's less jumping, right? So the shot mechanics are different for the long-range shot versus the midi, which he's much more comfortable with. And it's, you know, I mean, it's not unique to Scoot for a mid-range shot to differ from the long range shot to get more elevation. It's, you know, that's fairly normal for a shooter. For my notes, I actually wrote, like, and you touched on it, like the form is really not that bad. He gets good arc. The form is fairly repeatable. There's like an ever so slight like right elbow flare. It's like very subtle. It's nothing major, but on some of his makes first misses, you can kind of tell, especially at certain camera angles. But the thing that stood out to me the most is one, shot readiness.
Okay.
And then the other thing was his balance.
Okay.
And that nice. Comes back to his base, right? Like you mentioned that sometimes his feet would be a little bit closer. I think when you're looking at him as a shooter, as a in catch and shoot situations versus off the bounce, I think that's where you see subtle differences as well. I think in catch and shoot situations, his shot prep is a little bit better when, you know, the pass is on the money. You could see that he's kind of like waiting, getting low, kind of ready to use his momentum to create like upward trajectory. Versus sometimes where he's shooting off the bounce, it's like a little fidgety. It's like not super smooth from the 3-point distance. Mm. And I think that's one of the things, like, you know, 20% is pretty bad for a lead ball handler, but you know, it comes back to like Victor last week. Like he was, you know, supposed to be in high school playing in the NBA G League. You know right. what I mean? So I think the adjustment to the distance of the line is something that he dealt with last year. You know, if you yeah. look at a lot of his misses, they're short a lot
very
of the time.
Short, very short. Yeah.
You know, like, it, and it's almost like the reverse Tyrese Maxey for him. You know, I remember when we talked about Maxey and his shot, I was saying how he kind of needed to shoot more up than out. Like he would shoot it forward and he needed to just get a little bit more arc, a little bit more elevation. So it wasn't so line drivey, creating like, you know, weird misses. For Scoot, he almost shoots it too up sometimes, where you almost want to have him rein that in a little bit and shoot forward a little bit more so he gets that extra distance, especially because he's not generating as much power from his base as he is on the mid-range as far as like elevation. So I mean, overall, if I'm looking about like what is like the best base for somebody to work with, I think ultimately for NBA players, it's like whatever works. You know, like that's kind of good. Like if AJ Griffin is going to continue to shoot 47% from three with looking, you know, like who was it, Jeff Bagwell, you know, like like great, you know what I mean, like go yeah. for it, you know, I'm not, who's complaining about that. If somebody, you know, can knock down 45% of shots with their feet stuck together, like great, I guess, right? Like I guess it all depends contextually what kind of shots they're making, how versatile they are. For me, I always think back when I was younger. I always attended the Villanova basketball camp, and it started with Steve Lapis, and then eventually Jay Wright took over. And one of the years, you know, you always get guest speakers at these camps. You know, we had like Tim Thomas come one year, which was cool. He didn't want to talk to us at all, and that wasn't that was apparent. But like one of the years, Ray Allen's shooting coach was the guest speaker, and it was this old dude who just looked like he should have been an accountant. Like he was just a regular person's height. He was he just looked like a regular old white dude, like stock mid 40s white guy. Like that was his aesthetic. And he did not miss one shot the entire time he spoke to us. He was shooting half court shots. He was shooting 3-point shots. He was shooting left-handed shots. This dude was a maniac. Like I've never seen anything like it. It was insane. But something that always stuck with me, it's something that I always try to tell my players when I'm coaching. And I'm actually, you know, I'm coaching a really young team right now. So it's something that I'm dealing with a lot, trying to get these kids who have not really been coached up a ton in their life to try to rework their shots. But there's this one kid in particular who's got this really awkward base where his right foot is kind of like almost in line with his left foot. Like not quite, but it's like almost in a straight line, you know? So he's, but his, and I'm just like, I remember what Ray Allen, shooting coach, said to me, like, as he was speaking to us, where he was like, picture you're in a fighting stance. Okay. Like if you were fighting, how would you square up with somebody? Right. Like you want balance. You want your feet to kind of be like shoulder width apart, slight bend in the knee. That way, if somebody's, you know, swinging on you, you can kind of bob and weave, you can avoid, you can kind of make a move, and you're always on balance no matter what body movement you have to do. And that's something that has kind of always stuck with me and something that I try to teach. So a lot of times I'll like go over to somebody and I'll be like, get in your shooting, you know, stance, your whatever your shooting form would be, your, you know, your, let me see your base. And then I'll go up to him, get in a fighting stance, and be like, do you think if I swung on you, you can keep your balance?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they'll be like, no. And it's like, right. So why would you want to shoot like that? Like,
got it.
You know, so for me, like, it's almost like you're in a fighting stance where, you know, you're just, you just have a good slight bend, good, you know, your feet are shoulder width apart. You know, to me, that's kind of what I try to personally do, but it's really whatever is comfortable for the shooter, I think is, you know, what really you're trying to get. Cause if a kid is knocking down shots, if Scoot is knocking down shots, then, you know, in a variety of ways, then, like, you know, you don't want to alter it too much, but obviously Scoot has a ton of work to do because, you know, he shot 20% in 21 games. You know, I know a lot of the statistics for, you know, that are out there available to the public on websites say he has like 11 games worth, but, you know, we have the Instat catalog where it's 21 games. So, you know, 19.6% on in 21 games is, it's a big sample.
It's not,
you know, it's not like he was warming the bench, but again, I'm actually pretty optimistic. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that he has these little inconsistencies that, when you're just looking on the surface, his shot looks pretty good, but he's adjusting to the line. He's adjusting to the speed. He's going, you know, high school to the pros and not high school to the pros as a graduating senior. You know, he's going high school to the pros as a kid who, you know, is like reclassing. So as a year earlier. So I think like next year you can kind of, I think we're going to see a pretty decent spike. Like, I don't think he's going to come in and shoot 40%, but it wouldn't shock me if he was at like 35% next year as a shooter. And honestly, a lot of it kind of reminds me of like the conversation around like Davion Mitchell, who, you know, struggled as a shooter early on in his career and then ultimately kind of got comfortable. And, you know, he was at like 45% by the time he left Baylor. And, you know, he was inconsistent last year. But to me, it's like he started coming on at the end of the year and it's like, can you trust the form? Can you trust the eye test? And I think that, you know, if Scoot's going to put in work to kind of fix that base up a little bit, kind of work on the smoothness off the bounce and just, you know, kind of be shot ready. A lot of the time his shot readiness too, like off the ball, especially like when he's getting weak side hits. And this is something that we'll talk about, like when with his off the, off ball offense is like, he doesn't really know where to position himself yet, you know, in like a pro level offense. A lot of time he'll just kind of be like in like the short corner, like when, you know, he should be spaced all the way, you know, to the corner and he's just like packing the paint. So when somebody drives, he's got to kind of back up to the 3-point line. And that's a really hard shot to hit. So there's like little things that I think are going to help his shot that aren't even necessarily like, or his percentages, at least, that aren't even necessarily have to do with the form. So, but again, like I'm optimistic. I don't think his form is bad. I think visually it looks all right. And I think if you're coming and starting at a point where visually and aesthetically, like it looks okay, he's not palming, you know, getting a lot of palm on the shot. Right. I think that's a really good starting point to build off of because, you know, what if he played high school last year? You know, maybe he, you know, he's getting these easy looks and he's shooting in the 40s. Or if he plays in college, he's getting easier looks. Like he was playing in the NBA G League as, you know, a kid who should have been in high school. So I think that affected his percentage a little bit, but I'm optimistic.
No, if I can, Corey, you just threw like a million things, but that was a great answer. I think for me, give me a second, I have to process because there was like three things that I wanted to say. First off, I love the Tim Thomas shout out because at the camp that I was at in fifth grade, a God Sham God came and God Sham God just dribbled the ball a lot. And
well, as he does,
I know, as he does, as he does, like, you know, to his credit, gosh, I'm God should be dribbling a lot if he shows up at your basketball camp, but we're hoping for something else, but it's fine. That was great, but yeah, Corey, something that you mentioned that I definitely vibe with is it felt like he definitely was getting acclimated to the distance. As you mentioned, he was short a lot, and a lot, if not I wouldn't say all, but a vast majority of his misses were really, really short. That's why, you know, watching him shoot, I thought it was the base because his feet were so close together. But I really like what you said. If it's comfortable and it's working for him, then I'll go in. And I'm really excited for him to keep working. And the thing that I really, Corey, was, and I know, like, you've talked about this before when we're talking about other shooters, but there wasn't a disconnect between his lower half and his upper half. It all felt very fluid and connected. And I was like, well, if that's going to be the case, then I think as he gets more acclimated to the distance and he literally just puts in the hours and the shots necessary, then I think he's going to be just fine as a shooter. And with his athleticism and, of course, the different facets of his game that we're going to talk about, if he's shooting 35 to 36% from three, we're talking about a really, really good player. And one last thing I wanted to talk about, and I wanted to get your feedback on as well. You said that when he's off ball, he gets lost a little bit and he kind of like, not, he doesn't really know where to be. What I thought was interesting though, Corey, is I agree with that, but I thought it was weird that he had a good sense of where his teammates were supposed to be when he had the ball. But oddly, when he didn't have the ball, he didn't know where to go, which I thought is a really interesting thing. And if you can, I apologize for putting so much of the pressure on you as the coach of our pod, but is that something that you see a lot of when we're talking about high school kids that have that disconnect where with the ball in their hands, they'll know what to do and where everyone else is, but without the ball, that there's that disconnect where they just don't know where to be?
For sure. And even at a higher level than just like young kids, like high school, AAU, mm-hmm. you know, even, you know, looking college at any level, like LaMelo Ball, if you go back and watch his film in Australia,
yeah,
he did a lot of that. And like, who can find his teammates and knows where his guys are? What better example than a guy like LaMelo, you know? So it's like mm-hmm. for people that are so used to having the rock in their hands,
okay,
when, you know, it's a little bit different. Like, yeah, you know where guys are, but what do you do when you don't have the ball in your hands anymore? This is the first time that Scoot has probably ever played in an offense where he wasn't featured in the offense the way you would expect a prospect like him to be, because he was not eligible to be drafted this year. You know, the G League focus was on Jaden Hardy and Marjon Beauchamp and Dyson Daniels. And to be honest, it was really fun to go back to this film post-draft because I was like, wow, like Hardy really pops in all of the moments that Scoot is on the floor. Like he really popped in a good way offensively in all these games that I was watching, and Beauchamp too. I was like, wow, like I probably should have been a little bit higher on Marjon as well. I thought those two guys really popped going back to it, but those guys were kind of the focus. Cause you know, the G League put out a graphic on Twitter today. Like since they've been a program, they've had the most first round or the most guys drafted, or they've had the most top 10 guys drafted out of any program, you know? So kind of as a recruitment tool, like, hey, we'll get you drafted. We'll get you drafted high. If you come here versus going to Kentucky, Duke, wherever, we have the same kind of track record development. Plus, you know, you could learn how to be in a pro system. So Scoot he definitely had the ball, you know, enough to showcase the skills that he had, you know, not to say that he was always off ball, but there are a lot of times where it's like Dyson Daniels. He was the point guard of this draft, right? Like he's going to have the ball in his hands. Hardy. Honestly, Jaden Hardy actually really fits well next to Scoot from a style perspective with all his off ball movement. And I think that really helped him as a player, having a guy like him who was so dynamic with the ball in his hands. And it actually makes me think like, wow, like this kid could be really fun next to Luka with all the attention that Luka is going to draw. Yes. But yeah, I think it's there's a learning curve when you are first learning how to play off ball all the time, especially in an NBA offense where the speed is so quick and you're like, okay, I just got into the paint. I kicked out and I'm still in the paint. Where do I go now? Like you have to make these decisions even when you are creating, like, what do I do after this now? So I think that the experience that he got this year with all of the film that he's going to have to watch, and the fact that next year he'll be featured more often, I think all of this stuff is going to get cleaned up and you're going to see like a much more crisp prospect. Cause the prospect that we saw last year, much like Victor, does have like certain flaws that you look at and you're like, I wish he was better at this. I wish he was better at this. But it's almost like if you're comparing that film to the final year film of like the guys who were in the last year draft, it's like almost unfair because they have a whole nother leap of development to go still. But with that said, like this is still a kid who was efficient in the G League and like even with his shooting struggles, still managed to get his offense cleanly. But I think all the off-ball stuff he'll figure out. And I think when he does, like I think he could be a dynamic cutter. Because I do think he needs to, in order to fulfill his potential, like with modern NBA offenses, you do have to learn how to play with other dynamic ball handlers.
Yeah,
right. You know, and that's something that I really thought was a good developmental thing for him playing next to a guy like Dyson Daniels, who can play with the ball in their hands, playing next to Jaden Hardy, these guys, because it could prepare him again for the league when he gets there playing. You know, because I don't know who Detroit might suck. Again, right. And like, you know, he's got, now he's going to be sharing the ball with Cade or who knows what other teams, you know, Orlando might suck again. And you got Paolo there. So I think that learning how to do that was a positive, but I think that he's going to be a dynamic cutter. And I think you see that in some of like his timing is really pretty interesting on like give and goes,
okay,
you know, like, yeah, shoot. Because you got the look in your eye like you want to say something.
No, I had a question. Another question.
Yeah.
I came with a lot of questions for you today because the thing with Scoot is I think the reason why I have so many questions today is because we're so used to talking about like college guys coming into the draft and not so much of these like younger high school guys. And so there was so much about his game that like I was just curious about in terms of like the nuance of his development, right? So with Scoot, you mentioned the cutting, right? I actually thought, as you mentioned, the timing was good, but there were times where it goes back to the awkwardness where he would start to cut and then for whatever reason stop and not finish, or there was like a hesitation or whatever it was. So Corey was wondering if you could speak about that a little bit. So my question to you is, number one, where does that come from, right? What was it that was causing him to hesitate a little bit or to not finish his cuts? Or what was it, a coaching thing? Was it a developmental thing? Was it because I thought the timing was good, but the execution wasn't always there. So I was wondering if you could give us a little bit of feedback on that.
Yeah, I think overall he wasn't like a very good cutter. I think just like on certain, like the give and go type stuff where he can like, it was almost like it was him creating like a transition opportunity in the half court where it was just like quick pitch to, you know, like the big man and then a quick little drop off. And now he's at the rim in space. I think, you know, more of like the off ball cutting, the indecisiveness. I mean, I think you probably would have to get inside his head and ask him what it really is. But, you know, I think it's just, again, like learning and understanding, like, when do I disrupt an NBA set? You know, is it okay, like, if I have an advantage to kind of, in the middle of a play, just kind of go haywire and break out of it a little bit? Yeah, go off script a little bit and kind of disrupt it. And am I confident in my ability to do that? Am I going to, you know, is that something the coach is going to, you know, say is bad and negative? Am I going to sit? I don't know. I think you'd have to get in his head, but I just think the indecisiveness of not always having the ball in his hands, like he probably was used to learning on the fly, how to do it at game speed against NBA players. I think that's probably what it is. But I think that it's something that is good that he, you know, you saw the area that he needed to improve on this year, because it could be something that we see next year. He's going to be playing with some pretty good passers potentially on the, you know, next G League Ignite iteration next year. You know, Leonard Miller is an interesting passer at his size. And I think that, you know, they're going to try to get him opportunities to play with the ball in his hands, because that's something that makes him intriguing. If he's not playing with the ball in his hands, it's like, what is all that intriguing about Leonard Miller that you're not getting from, I don't know, Fambo Zhang, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, if all you're doing, if you want a tall lefty shooter, right? Like, the thing that makes Leonard Miller interesting is that he can, you know, dribble and make plays. So I think he'll get the opportunity to show improvements on that end. And, you know, hopefully we see it.
Okay. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. It's just, yeah, when I was watching him, you know, once again, it reminded me of you, and, you know, you work with a lot of high school age kids. I'm just wondering where, you know, his psyche was. Obviously, you can't go into his brain and find out for sure, but you see a lot of kids that age, so I was wondering what that was. But Corey, you did mention the passing a little bit, or that he was playing with guys who could pass well. I think that's a really cool transition for us, because I actually thought he was a really good passer. So, like, you know, we talk a lot when we talk, it's funny when we talk about like high level passing, we talk a lot about like touch and weak side hits and things like that. But for me, I thought the biggest thing was we talked about the off ball stuff. I thought he had a really good feel of where his teammates were supposed to be. And he did make some really, really cool weak side hits. I thought he especially made a lot of good reads when he was attacking the rim and getting downhill, whether it was feeding the big when, you know, the big defender was helping and making that read, or, you know, if the one you talk about a lot is off drives, the low man, when he's helping strong side, he's finding the right guys open on that side or whatever. I thought he did a lot of that stuff, you know, that is, in my opinion, really high level stuff that I imagine must be really hard to do as a 17-year-old coming into play with those guys who are a little bit older, you know, more experienced, yada, yada, yada. Thought he did a really good job. And so wanted to ask you what you thought about that, because for my opinion, I thought he did a pretty damn good job.
Yeah. You know, I think when your first impression of a player like him coming in that young, who's so reliant on his athleticism, that he wouldn't have, you know, the kind of natural feel of a playmaker. And I still think he's working some of that out, but he had a 2-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. And you know, you saw like Jaden Hardy struggled with turnovers, you know, and you know, look, Jaden Hardy's not a point guard. You know, as much as the Ignite tried to give him some of those reps, he's not that natural playmaker. But Scoot, you know, almost 4 assists to basically 2 turnovers, like as a, you know, young kid in a man's league, really impressive. I and you mentioned those weak side hits that we always talk about. Yeah, like the big struggle for young guys, right? It's like finding the balance, especially scoring guard. Finding the balance of when do I score and when do I leverage that scoring to be able to make plays for my teammates. That's what made Luka special at such a young age. And the guys on the No Ceilings feed did a great job of going back and talking about Luka, what made him special in their kind of retrospective look at that draft.
Right.
And Luka was doing things that are just all time special, you know, at that age. You know, Scoot's not that level of, I don't think he's that level of prospect. I don't think he's that level of playmaker, but he had some really good moments. You know, a lot of his drives do result in kind of just that, like his athleticism, his blow by burst is really impressive. So he's basically just making that, you know, hit to the one more, like the next guy, the closest guy, one pass away. But some of the ones that I highlighted in my notes, absolute dime to Jaden Hardy in the Stockton Kings game. He actually had a good one to Dyson Daniels after that as well. Mm-hmm. Came off a quick pitch and go, and then whipped a perfect weak side pass. And you know, when I was watching that game, I'm like, all right, I want to see more of that. Cause a lot of it is just the one pass away. So let me see more of that. He showed it again with Dyson Daniels. Then watching one of the Warriors games, he was just working Frankie Ferrari, in these high ball screens. And he had a couple of weak side hits and what was so impressive is how he read these two weak side hits in very similar plays. So he's going right, coming off the screen. And the first one was kind of like, he just comes off, he sees where the help is pulled over, the gravity that he's creating to the rim. And he hits that like overhand, like over the head, like two hand, like swing all the way to the corner.
Yeah.
Wasn't the most crisp pass like ever, but it got there and, you know, it was an assist. Made shot. Then there was one after that was very similar where he got a little bit deeper into the teeth of the defense. So now in knowing that he just made that corner hit, he got in, the help starts drifting to the corner and he hit that the weak side wing instead.
Yeah.
And it was really sweet. And that's kind of stuff that you're like, okay, there is something here, because he is going to be that guy that I think ultimately you probably want to be like your number one scoring option, the same way Damian Lillard is, the same way Trae Young is, different in how they get their points, but like those guys who are dominating the ball with usage and, you know, potentially being your leading scorer. But if he can also make his teammates better and make these high level reads, then, you know, you're talking about a guy who you could see going really deep into the playoffs, like maybe leading his team the way that Ja Morant is. I don't think he's as natural a playmaker as Ja, but there are definitely certain tendencies, and he has certain advantages, I think, physically over Ja that by the time, you know, he's like 21, 22, you're gonna be like, oh my God, this kid is a fucking freak of nature, you know? So that's going to be interesting to see. But yeah, I think some of those high level reads are really impressive. And I think he's a pretty good decision maker. Like, you know, I think when you're looking at his turnovers, a lot of them come from like he needs to tighten his handle. I think that his handle is a little loose, especially against NBA defenders. He's got like a really fun handle. You know, he's got all of the combos. You can go between his legs. He's got the like the little hang dribble hezzy. He's got all that stuff. But it could be a little loose, a little sloppy. I think with age, as he works more, that's going to tighten up. I think he's going to be a really, really good ball handler eventually. But I think where some of the turnovers come from aren't necessarily like trying to make passes that he's not capable of. It's more so it's kind of like the Westbrookian not understanding his athleticism all the time and knowing that like defenses are going to expect him to be the one who is just like driving into the paint. So they're meeting him. So like he'll run into the defenders a lot. And I think, you know, where that really like the best example of that and where it manifested is, who was he playing? Maybe it was Mexico City. He had the ball 10 seconds left in the game, tie game. So G League Ignite could, you know, had the last possession. He drives and three defenders just collapse.
Yeah.
Right. Because they know what he's going to do. And he drives right into the, you know, his man who bodies up, takes a charge. We're going the other way. And Mexico City hits like a little floater, wins the game, all because he kind of, you know, didn't recognize the situation. Right. He just tried to use his athleticism. Let me just get to the rim any way possible. And, you know, really strong side came over and helped. And Jaden Hardy was open in the corner. Could have been a kick. Who knows? You know, and then from there, make or miss. But he just charged. Like, those are the kind of the decisions that he still has trouble making. It's more of like, how deep do I get before I get off the ball? Yeah. You know, he's very like downhill, bowling ball, out of control. And not all the time. I mean, he only averaged two turnovers a game. But like, as far as like what he needs to improve on going forward, finding that pace, playing at multiple speeds, that's kind of where I see the decision-making stuff. As far as his passing, I think he's been pretty solid. And he makes reads that are like, not safe, but like smart.
Yeah. Yeah. No, Corey, like, first off, what I'm like processing in my brain as we're talking about this is like, I don't think we've been this like nerdy about a player in a while. And that's exciting because I think that really speaks to how much we really, really like this guy and how he excited us while we're playing. The possession you talked about against the Warriors, where he took the screen at the top of the key and he started coming downhill. I think he made that two-hand pass over to Pujetter, who hit the three, right? But even that one, the thing that I absolutely loved about that possession was how he used the screen to get open and downhill. And I thought for his age, he was unbelievably good at using screens. I thought he was a really, really good, like for his age, setups. Of course, right? Yeah, great setup, timing, right? The closeness of it all, like so that like he's optimizing the effectiveness of the screen and all that. I thought he was really, really good for his age. And I thought that really helped him. And another thing that I thought of, Corey, as you were talking, something that you talked about when we were at Summer League is process when it comes to guys who can really shoot the ball, right? For Scoot, he's not a killer three-point shooter, but I thought his process as a mid-range shooter was really good. So a lot of times he's coming off the screen, and because he would hit a mid-range or two or three, right? And then after that, he would start to utilize that to his advantage where he would come off the screen, once again, using that screen really well. The big's coming to help, and he would manipulate that big to either with a hezzy or whatever, getting to the rim and getting a bucket or setting something up for his teammates. So that's something I really, really wanted to kind of highlight as well was the screen usage by Scoot. I thought was really impressive. And another thing that I wanted to bring up, you mentioned some of the wildness and the turnovers. One critique that I had about him when going to the rim was I thought his protection of the ball was inconsistent. I thought there were times where he would do a really good job of protecting the ball, and other times he'd do a really bad job of protecting the ball, where sometimes he's really loose with it, not just his handle, but, you know, like we've talked about before, Stephon Marbury would two-hand, you know, protect that ball. I thought at times he was a little bit bad at that, and he was a little prone to pokes, where guys would be able to poke the ball away from him. That I didn't love, but that's something I think, considering his physicality and everything and the way that he plays, is an easy cleanup. Like, that's not something I'm worried about. That's like a little fine-tuning where I think he'll be really, really good at that. And another critique that I had, Corey, that I wanted to ask you about, because I think it might be a psychological thing with him. I thought there were times where he was really aggressive offensively and other times where he's a little passive, where I wanted him to be a little bit more aggressive. But I did wonder while watching the tape, was it because of who he was playing with? Was it because he had veterans like Pujetta on the team? Or because, as you mentioned, first round type of talented guys in Marshawn Beauchamp, Dyson Daniels, and Jaden Hardy? So that's something that I wanted to bring up to you and ask you once again. I thought there were times where his aggression was, where he was freakishly aggressive at times, and other times kind of missing there. And was that because of the team that he was playing on?
I think a little bit of this, a little bit of that, right? Certainly, I think that the Ignite are trying to create a system where everybody can showcase their abilities. So you're not going to see, you know, one guy get the James Harden usage treatment where they're just like, this is the only guy we want to showcase. We're trying to get him drafted. We have no other prospects, right? They're trying to let everybody eat. They're defining roles, and but at the same time pushing players to experiment. So pushing them out of their comfort zone. And I think, you know, having him be in situations where he is off ball or in half court situations where maybe he isn't comfortable. Like, I think with the aggressiveness, you know, you're talking about, you want to see aggressiveness, him in transition, right? Like, he's just like, I'm beating everybody down the floor. I'm going to the rim, or I'll find my teammate if that's if that's the best option. But like, I'm going to run the show, because especially because I think he's a really solid rebounder for a guard. And I think, you know, those grab and go opportunities that you see like prime Westbrook get, where he's just grabbing the ball and off a long rebound and just starting the break. I think he's going to have those same opportunities, and that's where a lot of his aggression is going to be early on, especially because, you know, the defense is scrambling. There's so much more space, and you can really see young players thrive in that environment, especially guys with his athleticism. But I just think, you know, it's a learning curve for him, learning when to be aggressive. When do I take over? When do I defer? When do I let Jaden Hardy cook? When do I let, you know, Dyson run the show? What is my role in this situation, that situation? Again, that's what's so intriguing and interesting for Scoot playing with the Ignite team, because if he went to, you know, some college, some D1 school, they'd probably give him the rock and, you know, kind of give him free rein to do whatever he wanted. A lot of times, and a lot of schools would give him that freedom. Mm-hmm. And he wouldn't get the opportunity to kind of grow as a player as early as he would need to. So I like that he can be put in uncomfortable situations, and you could see him processing and learning from them. And that's what's so fun, because we haven't seen this yet with a G League Ignite prospect, where they go back for year two. And now it's like, he's going back for his sophomore season. Let's see what he works on. Let's see how he gets better. I mean, think about how many prospects that we were high on last year that went back to school and got and took such a massive leap. Keegan Murray, Johnny Davis, Jaden Ivey, right? And I think Jaden Ivey is one of the comps that, you know, you would look for in this situation as far as like skilled athletic guards, as, you know, like so I think next year is gonna be really interesting to see how he works through some of those problems.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I'm really excited to see it all. And I loved how, there was a lot about his offensive game that we should like and we should be excited about. And as you mentioned, in year two, all the stuff that he was good at, I'm excited to see him get better. Also, Corey, you mentioned this kind of in passing, 78% for the free throw line, obviously skewed because they did the one shot, 2-point thing. Yeah. But still good, still really good and really encouraging. And he looked good at the line as well. Also, we kind of mentioned this before too, but at 17, he has the physique of a 24-year-old. So all good stuff, man. All really, really good stuff.
I want to ask you about his athleticism.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Where are you ranking his athleticism? I know in the No Ceilings group chat, we've had a lot of discussion about the term generational.
Right.
I've seen that word thrown around, you know, on a scale of like one to Derrick Rose. Mm-hmm. Where are you ranking our friend Scoot Henderson?
So I would never use the word generational for him. I don't think that's there at all. But he gets up really high really fast, which is fun. And he's really physical about it. So on a scale from him to Derrick Rose, a good 7.5, 8. Is that fair?
I think that's fair. I think it's fair because he's not Derrick Rose. I think
no.
Honestly, it's the craziest thing I've ever seen in person athletically on a basketball court. I watched the KD toe on the line game, and that was the craziest thing that I've ever witnessed on a basketball court, where I just felt like everything that left Durant's hand was going in. And as soon as it left his fingertips, you're like, oh my God, he is on fire. That is nothing but net. But from an athletic standpoint, seeing Derrick Rose up close was like, oh my God, this dude is a freaking alien. And the thing that was crazy about Derrick Rose was that he had the start stop. He had the side to side. It wasn't just like Westbrook, I feel like, was juggernaut. Just like, I am running through everybody and just dunking it from wherever I take off from. And it doesn't matter who's there. Derrick Rose was like able to like hit you in so many different ways. And I don't think Scoot is there. I think that he's a really great athlete. I'll be interested when we dive into the Thompson twins tape soon to see how comparable they are, because everybody is, you know, saying that they have generational athleticism, which, you know, based on what I watched scouting Montero last year, I would disagree with, but I think they're all great athletes. I think Scoot is going to be a top tier athlete. I don't even think he's Ja Morant level as an athlete, but he's 17. So let's see him strength 18. And conditioning. You know, he's 18 now, you know, he's playing, you know, last year. So like, let's see him as an 18-year-old in the G League. Let's see him as a 20-year-old in the NBA. Let's see what level he really gets to as an athlete. But it's clear that he is top tier, I think, as a guard athlete. Athletically, Jaden Ivey or Scoot Henderson?
My brain is buffering right now.
I know. It's a hard one.
Wow. I think for now, from 17-year-old Scoot tape, I'll say Ivy, but that could change after 18-year-old Scoot tape.
Yeah. Scoot had some pretty impressive bangers. He did. It's tough. It's really tough. All right. Let's talk about, let's take a quick break, and then we'll talk about his defense.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, we're back to talk about Scoot Henderson's defense. Let's start with the on-ball stuff. What did you see from him as an on-ball defender?
Shaky is what I like to say. I thought shaky. I thought overall, as a defender, I thought he was shaky all over. I'm not going to go as far to say I thought he was bad or anything like that. I think there's a lot of work that still needs to be done. I thought he showed good instincts. I thought he was pretty active with his hands. He has strong hands. I thought he was really good hands, which I enjoyed a lot. It's just at times, Corey, I don't know if it was a youth thing or like straight up like a stamina thing or what it was, but I thought his defense came and went at times. I'd like to see a little bit more focus. I'd like to see I hate to say this, there were moments where he showed a lot of effort, closing out on guys, running out on people, pushing, running people off the line, whatever. But also there were times where I thought he drifted a little bit, at times where you could kind of clearly see he was conserving energy, whatever it was. So I'd like to see a little bit more. I'm not as high as him on him as a defender as I am as an offensive player, but I'm also not saying he's a bad defender. I just think considering the youth and with the coaching that he's going to get, and also the sheer physique of him and also his ability to move side to side and things like that, I think there's a lot of potential for him to be a really good defender. It's just I didn't see enough in his 17-year-old tape for the G League Ignite last year to be like, oh, like I'm ready to be like, he's a great defender. I didn't get that at all, to be honest. But I'm also not out on him either, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think the goal with Scoot Henderson eventually is going to be like, can he be a net neutral defender, yes, right? Like that's what you always want with your number one options. Like if they're bringing two-way play, then, big time win. But with a guy like Scoot, you just like, can he be switchable? Can he, guard up and down? And theoretically, I think he can and will be able to. What I will say is when he was engaged, I really thought he could be a pest because he is strong, he is long, and he's a really fluid lateral mover with, as you mentioned, super quick hands. Like a lot of his, he averaged almost two steals a game in 24 and a half minutes. And a lot of that, like, sure, he played the passing lanes and all that, but a lot of it was like, he would just pick guys, poke away, like, kind of stuff you see in like a men's league where just like it almost was like easy where he was able to poke it away. So that was really impressive. When he's putting ball screens, I thought like,
yes,
he gets hit. Mm-hmm. He gets hit a lot.
Yeah.
And I think it's something that I did see signs of improvement on during the year where he would try to step over it. Like that's kind of the goal for ball screens. Like you want to avoid it. And you can do that two ways. You can go under ball screens. And I think that one of the things that Scoot had to, as like an overall team defender, needs to improve on is just like scouting report stuff. Like sometimes he would go under on shooters that like you definitely should not have gone under on. Or you can go over, right, and fight through the screens. And I thought he got better at fighting through screens, but like you need to step over these screens early so you can avoid getting hit altogether. And again, we bring this up and we bring Davion Mitchell up a lot defensively, especially for guards, because I do think he's, for as far as young guards and just, I think he's the gold standard.
Yes.
Right. For prospects. And I know that he watches Davion Mitchell as a guy that he emulates on the defensive end. Like I know that's a guy whose tape he's watching, and Davion is an absolute beast at stepping over and avoiding screens altogether, sliding through, blowing up those actions before they even happen. So that's something that I kind of want to see him do in ball screens. And then again, like the scouting report stuff, like in the Motor City game, they kind of targeted Scoot a little bit at points where they would send like they sent Isaiah Livers to be the screener, and they were playing like the Ignite were in a switch, and Livers popped and Scoot didn't switch right away. Like he stayed with his man, and then he was late to rotate, and it's like Livers is gonna knock, like a 3-point shooter like that is just gonna make you pay. And at the NBA level, like, it's not just Isaiah Livers, who had a great summer league and I think could be a part of the Pistons rotation next year, but it's like, you're looking at the best of the best shooters. Yeah, you're looking at your Duncan Robinsons and guys like that who are going to be running these actions, who at an NBA level are shooting 44-45%. So I think for me, that's kind of the areas of his game defensively that I want to see, because the potential is there, man. Like the strength, just the way he moves on the court, the way he's able to get in your chest and stay with you. And I think that, even though he's 6'2" and we don't know what his wingspan is, clearly has the length to guard up. and be a multi-position defender. He's got the strength to body up. And, you know, I don't think that small forwards are going to like physically dominate Scoot Henderson when he's 23, 24 years old. And he's been in the league for, you know, 4 years already. And then I think rebounding, like he's, like we touched on, like he's a really good rebounder for a guard. And that's part of defense, right? Finishing the play, getting the rebound. So there are definitely things that you could point to and be optimistic about. There are flashes. And I think defensively, it's so much less instinctual for a guard to be learning NBA defense than it is to like go in and play on offense, because you could just do things with the ball in your hands and freelance and all that. Like, it's much harder to do that and freelance a lot, like defensively, especially when you're like a guard like him, who's not like, you know, blocking a ton of shots or anything like that. Right. So just like learning the rotations and not having to like go in the paint, get out of the paint, and not just plant yourself there like you could in high school or at other levels, and like learning how to do all that while, you know, being locked in, engaged, and learn, you know, remembering the scout, all the things that go into defense is fucking hard. It's really hard. So I thought he showed intriguing flashes, but yeah, he definitely wasn't like a positive on that end.
No. That's exactly how I find Corey. Like, I know people give us shit all the time for agreeing too much, but I literally had that in my notes too, where I said, I think the film work has to be there. Knowing the personnel has to be there, because I could not agree with you more about the fact that he a lot of times made really critical mistakes in terms of navigating screens. I could show you on my Google Keep here exactly what I wrote. It's exactly the same thing where it was like, dude, like, you're guarding a guy who has the gun. You can't freaking go under. He's gonna make you pay, right? You have to navigate that well. But all of that stuff, once again, Corey, that I agree with you on it as well, is he's 17 and he's gonna learn 17. That, and he's gonna know who he's playing more and more, and he has the raw tools. Something I talk about a lot at work, honestly, when we talk about recruiting and bringing in new hires, is to be honest, people can have the hardware and not have the software, right? Mm. And if you have the hardware, you can install the software. But if you have people who don't have the hardware and try to install all of the software, you're asking for too much. And so we talk about that a lot when we talk about hiring and recruiting for our company. And that's something that I think about here with Scoot, where Scoot clearly has the hardware. He is a very fluid, natural, explosive athlete. Right? He's got the length, he's got the size, he's got the physique. All we need to now do is put in a little bit more of the software. And I think he's going to be, as you mentioned, at least a net neutral defender. Who knows? Maybe he's even better than that. I don't want to go that far and say that that'll happen, but I think it's a possibility because of how strong the hard drive is with Scoot. So I'm with you, man. I'm with
you. And one of the things that coaching, you know, high school age kids like Scoot was, that you realize, is that like these guys improve so much year to year, and experience is so important. And sometimes things that you couldn't instinctually do the year prior, all of a sudden something clicks and it's just like, oh, I get that now, you know? So like, that's why I'm so excited about Scoot's season next year, because it's his sophomore season in the NBA G League program where he is now the featured guy. No longer is it Jaden Hardy and Dyson Daniels and Beauchamp and Michael Foster. Like, now it's time for Scoot Henderson to be the guy and fight potentially for the number one overall pick spot. You know, Jalen Green was the number two pick, and I'm sure Scoot Henderson is looking like, I could be number one. I doubt he's looking at Victor and going, this thing is a done deal. And, you know, I would put my money on Victor right now, but, you know, I don't think that's Scoot Henderson's mentality. And I think he's going to try to have a monster season. Cause if you go and just look at the film, which we've really, you know, dove into and gotten into the nitty gritty, and then just you look at the raw numbers, it's like, shit, this kid was really good in his minutes, you know, and not just like good for a 17-year-old kid. Like, he was a good NBA G League player last year.
Right.
So it's really exciting.
He played with a lot of good players too, Corey. We have to emphasize that again. He played with good talent around, good numbers, 14 points, whatever. I'm with you, man. I'm really excited about him. Even like coming into the pod, I was excited, but after talking about him with you and hearing all this, I'm pumped.
All right. So if you're buying stock in Scoot Henderson, who may you have bought stock in previously?
Okay. Do not kill me for this, our listeners, because you may not like this one, because I want to explain the rationale. So I'll say the name first. The name first is Emmanuel Mudiay. I'm throwing that out there, but my goal for Scoot and my prayer and my hope for him is he will become what people thought Emmanuel Mudiay was going to become. Right. I think of Scoot as Emmanuel Mudiay, but with more athleticism, of course, but also, you know, better shooting mechanics. Mudiay never figured out the shooting stuff ever. He never even got close. His jump shot was always a nightmare. I will forever laugh at David Fizdale for his opening press conference with the Knicks saying, "Mud, we're going to get you figured out." Never happened. Never happened. And he called him Mud. So great introduction. That never worked out. But Emmanuel Mudiay was a highly touted prospect coming out of high school.
Absolutely.
He ended up, yeah, he was. He was an explosive guard, big physical guard that people had really high hopes for. I imagine that Scoot Henderson could be the absolute best version of what people thought Emmanuel Mudiay was going to become. I think Scoot's going to be very physical. He's going to be very explosive. I think he's going to shoot it well enough, as we've talked about in detail in our pod today, and he's going to have enough passing chops to be a lead guard in the NBA and will eventually be, in my opinion, fully worthy of the number one pick discussion alongside Victor Wembanyama. So I'm not saying that he's going to turn out the way that Emmanuel Mudiay did in the NBA, but I'm saying if the absolute 1% result of, or 1% scenario of Emmanuel Mudiay was to be this multi-time all-star, potentially even like all-NBA guy, I think that could happen for Scoot Henderson that didn't happen for Mudiay.
I don't think that's as crazy as it seems, right? Because you're saying, you know, ultimate if Mudiay hit his ceiling, right? And right. Like he's still, what do you go, seventh, right?
Yeah.
To, I think, yeah. The Nuggets, whatever the Nuggets, it was. Yeah. Like, that's still a top 10 pick, and Scoot Henderson, I think, has already shown more as a prospect than Mudiay had at the same age. For me, I came up with a few names. Baby Ann Edwards, I think, is one. Not quite the shooting volume from three,
right.
But, you know, Ant struggled percentage-wise in college, but it was always like, hey, does the form look good for me? It's like, if the form looks good, then why are we worried about him as a shooter? Because he'll figure it out and he'll rein the shot selection in a little bit. And then Dwayne Wade Light.
Wow. Wow.
Because he's a little shorter, but I think there's a lot of similarities with D Wade in the strong, athletic, kind of score first, but have those playmaking chops. Cause I think Dwayne Wade was a really underrated passer, and the way he gets into the paint, the way that, you know, he looks for his mid-range shot, even though he struggles as a three-point shooter, it still doesn't stop him from getting to his spots. And I think that's something that Wade never had a problem with, because he was so good at, one, beating you athletically off the bounce, but also he was really good in the pick and roll as a scorer, as a downhill threat. So I see some Dwayne Wade type tendencies in him, and of course there are flashes of like D-Rose and flashes of Westbrook at times, but I think that he could be kind of like a Dwayne Wade light, and I don't say that lightly. You know, those are high, that's a high bar, but I think that, you know, he could be a guy who, you know, makes teams go, you know what, I want one of those too. I want a Scoot Henderson on my team. Yeah, the league is about spacing and shooting and, you know, big jumbo initiators, but like, I want a guy like Scoot who's so dynamic at getting into the paint and cutting up the defense, could score and can get to the mid-range shot and is going to be able to get buckets in the clutch. Like, that's who I want. So I think Scoot can get there. All right. It's time. America's favorite segment. It's time, Albert, for you to sell me this pen on Scoot Henderson.
Here we go. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name's Albert, and I'm here to sell you on Scoot Henderson. Scoot Henderson is an extremely physical guard, a guy who has, I mean, you're talking about, you want his type of physique in your basketball players. Got huge shoulders, big old chest. He's going to be fantastic as an athlete, super explosive. But the thing with Scoot Anderson that you're going to love is that with all the athleticism, with all the measurables, with all the tools that he has physically, the thing that you're going to love about Scoot Henderson is that he adds finesse to that as well. He's a strong mid-range shooter, as Corey mentioned earlier, in the 95th percentile from the mid-range. He's a developing three-point shooter with no major flaws in his shot. We think with more reps and time and experience, he's just going to get better, and he'll be either mediocre or above average as a shooter. Strong passer, maybe not the best passer in the world, but a very good, strong passer. And a guy that, as we've mentioned, can change gears, change speeds, can get to his spots, will be physical at the rim, will be physical with his man. Defensively, we think he's got all the tools to grow and become a decent, if not above average, defender as well. So if you consider all that from your lead guard, right? That sounds like a pretty damn good prospect and somebody that you'd feel really good about investing in for the next 7 to 10 years, and hopefully even longer if he ends up in a good situation. So Scoot Henderson's a guy who is not by any means a perfect prospect, but he has so many innate God-given tools and talent that's the type of guy that you want to bet on. And also, he showed enough mentally and with soft skills that you will be excited about his outlook as an overall potential superstar as well.
I will buy one Scoot Henderson, please.
clearly we like the kid, man. Clearly. Yeah. Yeah.
Kid is a lot of fun, man. All right, Albert. This was a really good episode. This was fun. I'm glad that we did this with Scoot. I'm excited to dive into some of the rest of the class, because I think that we, you know, had a familiarity with Scoot, with Victor, and, you know, now it's time to get into some of the guys who are, you know, more off the radar, but are going to potentially be in the lottery conversation, you know, in the weeks to come leading up to the regular season as we go through our list of guys. So, all right, Albert, tell the WWWs where everyone can find you.
You guys can find me at Alberto Gim is where you can find me. And Corey, before we go, something that I did really want to say, I know we have all our different segments and we do, you know, sell me this pen, all this stuff. I'm hoping we can integrate more of Coach's Corner with you on our pod, because I feel like a lot of the insight that you gave our listeners today is a lot of stuff that I don't know if people talk about enough. Because Corey, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think a lot of times when you start talking basketball with people, I don't know if it's a pride thing, I don't know what it is, but there's this expectation where you want to kind of show off, or not show off, but present yourself as somebody who knows a lot, who knows ball, who knows all these things. But I also think it's important for us and for people like you, Corey, who are obviously more well-versed in basketball, in the X's and O's, to kind of help people catch up a little bit. Like for me, like Corey, I've never coached at a high level. I've never coached high school or whatever. I've coached for church leagues. I've coached. What is that? Coached for, like, you know, men's leagues and stuff like that. But I've never coached at the level that you have, right? And I feel like the insight that you can give us from your experience and what you do literally on a day-to-day with your boys out on Long Island, I think that's the type of stuff that I think we could all benefit from as basketball fans. So did kind of want to throw that out there, because I thought today our conversation was so high level and really interesting and exciting. And I feel like I'm walking away from this discussion having learned a lot. And that's something I think would be really cool if we integrated more of, like, Coach's Corner, you know? So just wanted to say that as we leave.
I mean, you know, I'm down. I mean, absolutely. I love getting into the nitty gritty of hoops. I like, you know, I think you could talk casually about a prospect and still, you know, learn a lot from the conversation. And I think we can get into the nitty gritty. And, you know, as long as I'm explaining it in a way that everyone can understand, because I think that when you do get into the nitty gritty, sometimes, you know, basketball is hard. I try to not use like super complicated terminology that you would have to, like, go and research if I don't have to. But yeah, I would love to really talk more about that kind of stuff, because it is important, I think, contextually when you're looking at systems and the kind of offense that teams are running and, you know, that kind of stuff. It is stuff that you have to take into consideration, because I think that even for as much as we could play guessing games too, sometimes even, you know, the prospects will probably be the for us to tell you, like, oh, like we're saying like Scoot went under on somebody, but like what if the coaching staff was like,
go under,
we're supposed to go under, you know, like you're not going to defy your coach. So there's stuff like that to take into consideration too, in that perspective. But we're going to get into the details. I mean, I think we're the only draft pod that spends an hour every episode breaking down one particular prospect. So I think we already go pretty, you know, pretty deep into the nuance and, of things, but yeah, we can go deeper.
Yeah. No, just really quickly, I think for me, Corey, this pod was very meaningful for me. I feel like I learned a lot, and that's exciting, you know, and I imagine that a lot of our listeners come onto our pod to, of course, like, I think, Corey, like we have fun. We try to keep it fun and light and whatever, but I also think it's valuable when we're walking away having learned stuff, right? All the talk that you were talking about with Scoot and how he is manipulating things offensively, that's like high level stuff that I think is what, maybe some people may say it's not high level stuff. I don't know. But for me, like, I'm walking away feeling enriched. Like, I feel like I learned something. So just for our listeners out there, I just want you guys to know that's something that we have in mind and that Corey is fantastic at, and we want to do more of for you guys as well.
Well, I appreciate that. And sometimes you got to give yourself more credit too, because I think you understand the nuance a little bit better than, you know, you let on sometimes. But we will do that. And if you want to find, you know, all that stuff in short character bursts, you can find me on Twitter at Corey Teleba. Find my YouTube channel at the NBA Draft Dude. And then you can go to NBA, NoCeilingsNBA.com, where you can find all of our written work, including the rest of the No Ceilings crew. Subscribe. It's free. It's the off season, so we're publishing like 2 to 3 times a week. But once the season gets rolling, we'll be back to 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern time, directly to your inbox. And again, it is free. There's no reason not to subscribe. Make sure you are subscribed to the Draft Dag NBA Draft podcast. Rate us, give us a 5-star review. That would be dope AF. And also check out the No Ceilings NBA Draft podcast feed as well for a lot of cool stuff that we'll be doing throughout the offseason and into the season as we blow it up. Subscribe to No Ceilings TV. If you're watching already live, thank you. If you're watching the replay, shout out to you. Holla at your boys. We are out. We will see you next week. Peace.
Peace.